The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. You can save thousands off MSRP with Navy Federal's car buying service, powered by TrueCar. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/car buying.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. Hanging out today with Marcus and Melanie. How are you guys?
Blessed and unstoppable. Thank you for asking.
I'm great. Thank you.
Nice. Well, let's do a Patreon question of the day. What or who taught you or told you something you consider invaluable in your life?
First Sergeant Jonathan Eby, when I was stationed at 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines at 29 Palms. And I literally think about him every day. He'd say, you can learn from everyone. And he would say that to me when something particularly irritating had happened, when a sergeant was, you know, pissing me off, or when I saw something that was great. He'd say, learn from everyone what you want to do and what you want to make sure you never do. So thank you for Sergeant Jonathan Eby, if you're out there. Thank you.
That was a good pull, man. He was ready for that one.
He was ready. Like, he already like ready. He read this before I even said it.
Gate, man. How was it?
I actually haven't seen it, but yeah, I think about that guy a lot.
What about you?
I have so many people. I can't, I'm not like him. I can't.
I've got one actually. It was actually your dad. So I used to obviously work at y'all's house whenever I was young, building fences and stuff. And he told me a piece of advice. He said, if somebody asks you to do something and you say it's not your job, he'll say it's not your job anymore. Yeah. And it just stood with me to think that, you know, just, it was kind of a reminder that like, you're never too important to do something,
yeah,
you know, never smaller too than good. That, you know, too. That's good to help out.
Definitely something my dad would
yeah,
say.
Yeah, so that stuck with me forever.
I do have to give a little shout out because I think people that I've found or had incredible wisdom from that's not family, like all my family has, but Joyce Tucker has been a huge mentor and someone that I look up to in my life. I value everything that she says. She's a good friend, so that's who mine is.
Man, I don't know, from my dad to the thing he taught me, from I'm going to give you discipline every day of your life, and through discipline you're going to gain respect for yourself and respect for other people. The only time you ever lose your respect is when you lose your discipline. My martial arts instructor, sensei taught me to climb a mountain, you have to start at the bottom, one hand over the next. Billy taught me that with my teammates, it's up together, down together, live together, die together. If you're not a team, you got to start over. Governor Perry taught me that the only thing constant in life is change.
Yep. That's great.
And then the wife taught me to be happy and show joy. If kindness is free. And I don't think people delve into the whole thing, but the more kindness you show, people actually reciprocate not only with kindness, but gifts. That's because they don't know how to be kind. Mm-hmm. There's a hidden luxury in life inside that. That it's hard to break it into it, but if you spend enough time on it being kind and just keep going at it and keep going at it, the rewards come back because people don't know how to show kindness back, and that's how they do it, and that's how you know it's working.
It made sense.
Bumper sticker or something like that.
Hey, that was a great Patreon question. So mm-hmm. Thank you so much for asking that. Head over to patreon.com/teamneverquit. You can access some exclusive content, a challenge coin, some sweet merch, as well as the ability to ask these Patreon questions to our listeners and to our hosts. Make sure y'all check that out. Hey, we've got a great guest in store today. I'm going to say this name to the best of my abilities. Hernan Luis y Prado. Did I get it perfect? Is a 15-year Navy veteran, humanitarian, and entrepreneur. He's the founder and CEO of Workshops for Warriors, a nonprofit organization that provides transitioning service members and veterans compressed, advanced manufacturing training, certification, and job placements. Welcome to the show, Hernan.
Thank you very much for having me.
That name is a mouthful.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine stenciling that through five different sets of uniforms when your drill instructor says, "Hey, stupid, what part of just your last name did you not get?" And you're like, "Yeah, no, it is my last name." Like, do it again. And by the fifth time, he was, I think, too embarrassed that once he realized that was actually my whole last name, he's like, "Okay,
sorry,
shut up,
sorry,
just do it."
I think about that a lot, actually. When you see somebody with one of those stellar last names, got a lot of letters in it, it's like, man, military, that must have been a pain. Boot camp, having to do all that stenciling? Because remember, you didn't have the spray thing back in. You had to do the damn pen? Oh,
yes.
They're miserable. That's awesome. That's hilarious.
Boot camp and OCS.
Oh, man, right? Those NCOs got to have a blast watching that go down. That has to be – that's where you need to send the vets afterwards to part of the decom is go in there and teach the younger ones, man. Just makes it laugh. Oh, dude, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Thank you again for being here, by the way, brother. It's an honor to have you on, and thank you for your service and everything that you would do. So,
thank you for yours.
You're welcome. It was an honor to do it. Thanks for letting me do it. When we bring people in, it's those never quit stories, and everyone has a different one. Everybody has a different path in life. We're as unique as our fingerprints, right? But then you see people over time, they kind of distinguish themselves amongst our people. You're one of them, man. So how'd you get into all this? How'd this start? Let's back it up from the beginning.
Yeah, tell us your story.
For workshops, it was necessity, right? The mother of all. So I came back from Iraq after my first combat tour, and it was such a jarring shock to me. You know, before you go into a combat tour, as you know, you have this kind of like Hollywood vision of what it's going to look like when you come back from combat, and you know, everything is going to be cool. The broken guys or the dead guys or the injured guys are never you or your friends. It's always someone else, you know, some red shirt in the movie that you barely know of.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
You know?
Because you can't bust up the lead actors.
Right?
I never looked at it like that. But yeah, you're right.
And you know, I came back, and you know, as an officer like you, you think of this huge responsibility you have in theater of taking care of people, and that if you were stuck as a prisoner of war, you'd be responsible for their well-being and their safety and doing everything you can to kind of get out of that camp and get back to friendly forces. And I got back to the U.S. where, you know, we called it FOB San Diego when we came back here. And
so good.
We saw these honorable, capable, and proven men and women that I served with that were just struggling to find purpose in the regular civilian world. And you know, I had to do something. And one day I was literally walking in a mall, the most kind of pedestrian thing possible. And one of my Marines from when I was enlisted came up to me and said, "Hey, Doc, can you be my best man at my wedding this Friday?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And that's when I realized that he had lost both of his legs to an IED, and it totally floored me. Here I was, tough guy, combat vet, and my knees literally sank to the floor. I was there with my wife, and like you said, you know, we're going to sell everything that we have and we're going to do something. And to her credit, she said, yeah. And that's how we started Workshops for Warriors.
It's a good wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm about to say, man, what was the courage to get to that conversation, right? Sometimes that's harder than the combat ones. When you got to deliver, lay that one, like, hey, guess what?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It is, man. To back that up a little bit, to go off our own experience, and I was thinking about this earlier. It should be one of those things like we don't ever get out. I think that's the misconception, is the fact that they say that you're getting out,
right?
That totally just blows people's mind. I think about it now, and it even gives me a headache when they say that, because I literally had to reteach myself. Like, we don't ever get out. You're right. Never out. Boot camp is part of it. In the uniform is a part. It's like going through a different grade school, combat, different school. Imagine taking everything you do in America, and then they move us to like the worst war torn place. But we have to live our life in that. That's basically what's going down. And then we get to come back. It's forever uniform. We just get to put our name on it for a little bit. So when I started thinking about it like that, I was like, okay, so what's the next cycle? And there is a gap. There's a huge gap between that part when they drop us off the bus and where we're supposed to go. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because going to the bus station, you know, once you get there, then like, all right, now what? And it's, right. I had to reteach myself in my head to think that I would hear all my buddies like, "Hey, man, there's no job for a sniper out in the civilian world. There's no job. There's no job." I was like, no, not for the title, but everything that goes into being that, there is. What makes us up, Like, you can't take out all, we just take the color, the uniform off. We don't take what we are off. You can't do that. So we just keep stacking it. Like, life is our rank, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that gap that you're filling with what you're doing, man, that's spot on. Because there's that shock. But if you know that you're just graduating to a different level, then it makes it all the more, man, it makes it worth it. Because there's kind of not an end game. It's just, we just keep going.
You know, what you're saying is spot on. And I'm sure you felt it too. Again, I'm not going to presuppose, but I'm going to presuppose a little bit, because I think you and I have a kind of similar background that you have. You're taught when we're in, you know, you're a badass. You can do anything, you know, improvise, adapt, overcome. You have all these cool sayings, you know, it never rains. It's just liquid sunshine. Yeah. You know, you're cruising through life and you view as everything as a challenge to be overcome. And then you get out and, you know, here you are. You've been America's suit of armor for God knows how many years, right? And you're not a robot. You got your own brain, but it's like that familiar, you know, you put your LBVs on, you put your, all your, and you're all like suited up. You know what you're expected to do every day. You know what your mission is. You know where you're going to go. You know roughly like when you're going to wake up, when you're going to show up, what you're going to do. And you have that consistency in life, that purpose. And then you're just kind of ripped out of America's chainmail suit of armor and just kind of cast adrift. And I think the hardest part is just you're in free fall. You don't know, like, what's next? What am I supposed to do? Because, you know, America loves her veterans, but America needs welders, fabricators, machinists, and you need a civilianized skill set that other people can value and that gives you enough money, because, you know, vets aren't stupid. If you can go on BAH and unemployment and make more money than you could at a minimum wage job for 2 years, why not pay
Nintendo?
No
one can milk
Xbox?
The system. Yeah, right?
Right?
Well, it's not milking it. It's finding out what you're entitled to. That's the cool part about it. It's like we cover down on each other doing it. I completely agree with you 100% on that. 100%.
And Marcus, my friends call me H.
Okay, check.
Welcome to do that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Did you always want to serve? What was your calling to even get into the service?
You know, it sounds really goofy when you think about it, but I was, as my drill instructor said, a damn foreigner. I was actually born in Argentina and I grew up in Paris, France. So obviously I joined the U.S. Navy. Right?
You're on track to be the world's most interesting man.
And my tiger is right off camera. But
I'm going to get this guy famous.
Yeah.
I was a double E major, so electrical engineering and philosophy. And I wanted to be part of a fighting force that upheld a constitution or an idea and wasn't beholden to, you know, a monarchy, a bloodline, a race. And I wanted to be part of a military that had never systematically engaged in plunder or destruction. It was something that you were always accountable to someone else. You had these ideals that guided you, and you had an opportunity to rectify faults and to seek, you know, to seek compensation. Well, not to seek redress for wrongs. And that's one of the things that I loved about the U.S., and that's why I wanted to join the U.S. military.
How old were you when you came over?
I was 25 years old when I enlisted. I enlisted in Paris, and I actually went to Wiesbaden, Germany. And I actually did my first day of boot camp the 23rd of December, because clearly I had not researched the topic well enough, and I didn't realize that everyone took 2 weeks off, so I spent an extra 2 weeks of boot camp during Christmas.
No. We talk about that here. That is that needs to be in a book. There needs to be that. Because my brother went in 2 days before Thanksgiving, bro. And you know what I'm talking about? So that's the whole holiday stand down. And I tried. I was like, man, you're not going to do nothing. And then the weather sets in. I had you're drawing back some memories now, man. That's the funny stuff. Because when you pass it over to your friends, like, whatever you do, don't go on this day. Like, it's like planting season.
You run around in Chicago looking like a militarized nun. You know, with your cracker jacks popping up because the wind's at 40 knots and you're freezing going, why did I do this?
So
I mean
this is super interesting, because everybody that we know, with the exception of one person, is an American when they sign up, and they all have their own reasons, whether it's family or whatever. So you, no one in your family lived in America, you just had this idea on your own as an Argentinian born Parisian raised kid that just wanted to enlist. That's crazy to me.
It was, I had lived in the U.S. previously for a couple of years, and I really liked being in the U.S. and I love the fact, you know, I had been to so many different countries and there was always graft and corruption, and, you know, my uncle and many members of my family were killed by the Argentinian military, and I I didn't want to be a part of any one of those organizations. And I thought the U.S. was this kind of beacon of freedom and beacon of equality, and where things were made right. And if enough people saw it, they would make it right. And that there was no other country like that in the world.
It's the best way to become an American. I mean, you know, you're one right there. You want to sign up and fight for this thing? Boom, there's your stamp.
Yeah.
I remember showing up to boot camp, and I didn't know where I was at, what was going on. I thought it was a different country altogether. I mean, how that feels, right? No one's right. Your friend. No. Everyone's screaming at you. I mean, it's kind of, I remember that. And then it systematically makes you a citizen. I remember when they had all the National Guard up in D.C., and mm-hmm. some of the press was saying they were getting, you know, it's the National Guard have taken over D.C. This is a tragedy. I'm like, man, those are our greatest citizens. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are supposed to be. They can do whatever they want up there. That's their right. town. They're in the uniform protecting it. I just thought that was a mischaracterization of what was really going on. Yeah, there was some of our citizens doing some bad stuff, but, man, they could take the uniform off. That's just like everything else we put on.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, if you think about it, the FDA allows a certain amount of rat poop and eggs and rat hairs and pieces of rodents and almost all the food that we eat. So there's a small percentage of, you know, bad people and the larger pool of good people. You got to take that with a grain of salt, right? They're lies, damn lies, and statistics. You got to think about that a little bit, right?
Going back to your workshop for warriors, like, do you have an actual brick and mortar place where people go and learn how to do these trades?
Oh yeah, we're on three city blocks in San Diego on Main Street, right in front of the world's largest naval base. And I'm happy that you brought that up because, you know, when you think about veteran service organizations, there are almost 42,000 veteran service organizations in the U.S. Less than 2% of them have revenues of over $1 million, like Workshops for Warriors.
Is that true?
And
that's true.
Yeah, and 17% of that 2% actually own their own land or have full-time staff, and Workshops for Warriors is there too. We have 30 full-time members. We have land here on several city blocks on Main Street, San Diego, and we've got students here 5 days a week.
Oh, that's awesome.
0730 until 1800 every day.
That's incredible. And that had to be really expensive to get that yeah. set up. How did you do that?
We sold a lot of kidneys.
Oh my gosh.
Good for you. That's what I thought.
No, all kidding aside, we were resellers of Never Quit Ammunition.
That's good. It's been an operative of mine for a long time now. Y'all picking that up. It ought to be the last year of our enlistment is schooling out. How long does it take us to get us in there? Right? A year and some change, roughly, right?
To go through our program or in general?
No. To get us in the military, like when we're in docking mm-hmm. in, like when they're changing us, it's about that long, right? It ought to be that transition coming back out. The process should kind of be the same.
You know, that's a great point, Marcus, and that's one of the things that people bring up is, you know, it takes anywhere from 4 to 40 months to train a civilian to become a part of America's fighting force. It takes 5 days to make them civilians again. So there's just not enough of an off-ramp acceleration cycle.
5 days. I remember having my bags, the gate shut, and it was over. And I had left one of my bags in the deal, and I couldn't get back in. I was like, hey. And it's not, it's just, there's different life cycles going on down here, and we're kind of shifting mm-hmm. through them. That's what the military life's all about. It's supposed right. to be a ride, a great one. And for the longest time, I thought that was part of it. I was like, okay, so we're part mm-hmm. of the, team. We go in, we do this. And then now we have our isolation phase, like where they sent me by myself to see what I learned or if what I could do. But then I realized that, man, I don't operate well without my team. I'm just kind of just a cog in the wheel, if you will.
And that's the other big issue is that, you know, the military trains teams, but civilians hire people.
Wow.
So that's a great it's point. Hard to go from, and we see that every day at Workshops for Warriors, that you'll see these really impressive men and ladies that they'll always say my team, my team, my team, or R. And I said, hey, that's great. You got to shift to I now because they're basically going to hire.
I don't know if you
can
breathe that out of us, man. Because once you breed that never quit mentality in there, once someone tells us to quit, we shut it down. And then you've compounded it by war. Like then and now it's hammered in there.
You're right, but that's pretty smart. So if you tell them, hey, this is a new theater of operations, kind of like when you got that no kidding core.
I agree with that. I know exactly what you're about. Yeah, I could agree 100%. Not only are they smart, they're intuitive, witty, conniving. You know, that we play every hat, right, to stay alive out there to figure stuff out. And it's.
Right.
It's that instinct that gets shoved back into us. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, bro. That's good stuff. We don't ever talk about this stuff usually out loud, but that's on point. 100%.
Right.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's the biggest issue. We call our school the Velvet Funnel, where you go from the military, which is like this really tight straw where you're really confined every day in what you do and how you do it. You know what your peers expect of you. You know what your bosses are demanding of you. And you know what your subordinates are expecting of you. And all of a sudden, you got to give people a little bit more liberty and more liberty and more liberty before they get to the civilian world. That's what our school does. Because we take active duty people. We have transitioning people that are active duty when they start our program. And then they leave our program and they, you know, they get off active duty and transition to the civilian world within a week or two of leaving our school.
Do you have a problem finding students?
No, so just to give you an idea, there are about, there are a million veterans that are leaving the service over the next 5 years. And we've got about 16,000 job offers for every one of our graduates.
Oh, wow.
So right now, our biggest challenge is that we're constrained by capacity. We're constrained to about 190 graduates per year. And we're in the midst of a $20 million expansion to grow that to 486 graduates per year. But we have far more people than we can possibly accommodate in our program.
Could you, I mean, franchise is the wrong word, but could you open up satellite centers in other states?
So Melanie, that is a great question, probably the number one question that we have. And the answer to that is, yes, you can. The challenge with that is, who's going to man those schools? Right now, there are 2.3 million unfilled jobs due to lack of skilled labor in America. I'm going to say that again, 2.3 million. Mm-hmm. So Workshops 4 Years right now puts out 192 graduates per year. Once we expand to what President Obama, President Trump, and President Biden wanted, which was 103 schools throughout the nation, this school here in San Diego is going to grow to about 25 classrooms, about 2,500 graduates. It would take 703 schools like Workshops for Warriors at its max capacity, 10 years to fill America's current skills gap, just to give you an idea. And the biggest challenge is finding the instructors. So our school is like buds. We are the SecNav when he came to visit us. We are the SEAL team of manufacturing. We train the people that will train other people to become the vanguard for America's manufacturing force.
So how do you find your teachers?
Most of them are veterans. We also have several civilians that have come on board, and they're intellectually rigorous. They're teaching 40 to 50 hours a week, and they've kind of aligned with our mindset because we have a very little amount of time to transform people. We've got 4 months. Now that's 9 hours a day, 5 days a week for 16 weeks to convert people from military to competent machinists, welders, or fabricators. And we've been, 95% of our graduates.
It needs to be an EAOS. I'm sorry.
Again?
I'm just getting fired up. It ought to be an EAOS. Like where you transfer over, because we have everybody in the military. People just think it's not. We have everything from astronauts to people who hand out basketballs to rodeo team, baseball, everything.
You're right.
And it's not hard to you tell people what to do in the military. It's like, right? Hey, you're so smart, you're squared away. You're going over here and teach these guys how to become this. Mm-hmm. And it's part of your transition out period.
You're absolutely right.
Or transition over. We shouldn't say out ever. It's like over.
Right. No, and I see what you're saying, but a funny statistic is I'm married to the world's cutest nerd. So my wife is a survey methodologist and statistician. And one of the things that we do is everything we do is driven by data. So if you know what you're aiming for, you're more likely to hit it. And so we measure everything. And one of the things that we've noticed is about 16% of the people that come into our program were actually doing what they did in the service. So we only get 16% of people that were welders that want to become certified welders, or were machinists that want to become certified. You're just as likely to have a SEAL or SWIC or mess specialist become a machinist as you do anything else.
Absolutely.
I want to open a school.
I mean, the guys have all the skills, like especially in the team.
We should do that here. You should just.
So we've been asked to do it in Houston, and we'd love to. In fact, we've got some of our graduates down in Houston helping out at SpaceX. There's another guy down there that got one of our top instructors, and he's teaching down there. Our goal is to rebuild America one veteran at a time. To do that, we need to build the instructors and make sure they have the same intellectual rigor and discipline that our school has, and expand that mindset throughout America.
Yeah, and not separate. Like we keep bringing back to that. I mean, I don't. When it comes to we talked to some of my buddies the other day, man. If vets ever decide to unionize,
right?
I'm talking about, because we're in everything. That's a constant. We're flux through everybody and everywhere, mm-hmm. from all demographics, everything. And yes. we separate on purpose. I get that. But now it's kind of like everybody's, you can see it's forming. You can see everybody coming back together. It's like when they separated us, everyone had to go in their own direction to see what they were truly capable of and hone in on that skill. And now we're going to start pulling those laces tight since that boot up. Yeah, all right, Roger that.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely. And that's one of the things that we tell people is when you're in the teams or you're in the Navy or whatever, you've got a team, you got a tribe, but then you become a civilian and you lose your tribe. And what we tell graduates here is, hey, you've got 16 weeks here to start your new tribe, because the people to your left and to your right are going to be the people that are going to be following you in this career for the rest of your lives. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be working at SpaceX, Boeing, Tesla, Reliance Steel and Aluminum, Google, wherever it is. And in 5 years, you're going to say, hey, Marcus, how do you like SpaceX? And you say, oh, this is great, bro. You need to come over. And saying, you set up an interview for me. Then I go over there. And then we spend 10 years there.
That's just like we do anything else. We take when we go in to build something up. We go and send in the first one. You actually become an undercover operative. Your job is to go in there and make new friends.
Right.
And build a relationship. When you say you're not out, like, hey, you take the uniform off, you're undercover now, just like the SEALs were. When we graduate and get older, it's called getting more mature. You can handle that stuff. That's a real thing.
Right.
And when you go in there, always think, man, I'm on the job. I'm here, no matter what they say or who comes at you the wrong way, I'm here to make friends and get this thing going. Mm-hmm. I'm here to build something.
So are you only taking transitioning, or if someone's been out for 5 years and they just took some time off and don't know what to do, can they go?
Yes. So we do both, but transitioning and veterans. And depending on the semester, you might have one semester, you're going to have 80% of the, like this semester, we just graduated 64 people. Like 70% of them were active duty, 30% were veterans. Another semester could be 80% veterans, 20% active duty. It really depends on the semester.
Are you calling it by class numbers, like buds?
We didn't start at zero. In fact, we have actually made some plaques for, I think, class 1, 86. And we got a couple of the different class numbers here that we make the Budweiser for. But we haven't started the class numbers. We just go by year and by semester.
Well, that's a number. So start it like that. Because they'll start feeding it. They'll do it themselves. That'll pride. Works, bro.
Like, which class were you?
Yeah, what class were you? Oh, it was easy back there. Or hard.
2018-09? That's awesome. Who pays for the class? Does a student or is the government paying for that?
So we get the majority of our donations are from corporate philanthropists and individual donors. We do accept GI Bill, but students don't pay any out-of-pocket costs at all themselves. So the students that have GI Bill use it. The students that don't, we get scholarships for them.
Oh, that's huge. That's squared away. How was that hard to get that?
Oh, it took 8 years to get that.
I was going
to
say, man.
So easy. 8 years.
I kind of went past my ear when you said that, but that's because most people don't use it. I think I still have mine.
Are you doing stuff like IT work too, or is it just like hands-on manufacturing labor type?
So we teach three courses of instruction. One is computer-aided design, computer-aided manufacturing, welding and fabrication and machinery repair. So the three courses of instruction are 16 weeks long, and they lead to an average salary of $60,000 a year after 4 months of training in our school. So courses cost $25,000 to go in, and they make $60,000 after 4 months. So if you're a business person, you know, getting 200% plus ROI on your money,
that's pretty good.
Rate a pretty
return,
good deal in 4 months, right?
That's awesome. That's really cool. We need to talk afterwards and see how we can help put a school.
You come
in
up
the
here and do a podcast. You'd be amazed at how many people come up here, and the first thing they say is, "I had no idea that this was so big. I had no idea that I didn't know about it. And I had no idea how young these guys were."
That's the thing, is where you said it was located.
Your prime location. We'll actually be there in November on Veterans Day.
Yeah. We'll come.
Oh, will you?
Yeah, we'll roll over.
We're going to be.
We're going to come in early.
We have an event on Veterans Day that we're going to at the Dell for an organization called VETS, VETS. So if anybody's listening and wants to go to that, it's a big gala at the Dell.
We're all going to be there now.
We are. I've already committed you. There's no getting us out. There's no getting us out.
So I guess we're going to come over there and see you, bro.
Yeah.
Would love it. Would love it.
That's really cool.
To people to donate and to follow you, to help out, what's the best way they can do that? I mean, to get the word out, we're going to do that on this side, but just so they can follow you and keep track of all this.
The easiest way to give money or to help is to go to wfw.org. That's whiskey, foxtrotwhiskey.org. Or they can call us at 619 550-1620. And if you are, you know, have been in the military for a while, you're always looking at things through a trillion-dollar lens and seeing, you know, are these guys legit? Are they not? Workshops for Warriors is platinum certified by Charity Navigator, 100 out of 100 by GuideStar. We've never had a financial irregularity. 87% of all monies that we receive go straight to training programs. And this is in the midst of a huge capital campaign. And we increase our capacity every single semester.
That is something to be proud of. That's really cool.
We've got a great team.
To see it in the future, we're talking about the guys getting trained up and being like walk the earth kind of deal. You send them out as the people come in. There's a central hub. I always thought there should be a central hub. Mm-hmm. Like when as soon as you rotate out, your DD-214 slides across a desk, not a computer, a desk, right? Mm-hmm. And because we can read that, and it was like, oh, this is what this guy is qualified for. Find out what he wants to go do, and then what he's qualified for, and then we start communicating and putting this framework back together. Because it's been busted up too long.
You're talking like a military guy, right? These are one of the things that are so incredibly frustrating, Marcus, that you think like the easy things would get done. And the easy things are the hardest ones to get done. And internally, we have a saying, which is the hard things we do every day, the easy things kick our butts. And you'd be amazed at how difficult it is to get something simple. You'd say, okay, good. You're going to have a hub and spoke network. Everyone's going to go through this system, and then they're going to, you know, be allocated to wherever they want, depending on those criteria that you just mentioned. Finding a hub and spoke that's willing to open up their data, that's willing to have data, because people don't like to be scrutinized, right? You get what you inspect.
That's why it's military. That's why it's the military. You don't have a choice. You're being scrutinized right there on the paper. We're not letting you out of this thing ever.
Right. But when you go out to the real world, they don't care. And there's all these people that are kind of fighting for different funding. That's why we don't get money from the federal government, because it works faster by doing it alone with private donations. And thanks to corporate sponsors like Reliant Steel and Aluminum or Ford Motor Company or Facebook, and a lot of big private donors that wish to remain anonymous. But if it weren't for them, we couldn't move forward.
So one of the things that I've noticed just being married to Marcus for almost 11 years now is when the guys are getting out, it's not even that they can't find a job. It's that they don't want to find a job because it doesn't compare to what they were just in. And so it puts their mental state not in the best spot. A lot of them start drinking or taking pills or doing whatever to just kind of numb themselves. Mm-hmm. Do you see that happening in your school where people are just feeling kind of lost? And if so, how do you pep talk them out of it?
That's a great question. You know, my wife noticed that as well with other friends that come through service. And what I tell you is that happens when you lose your mission, when you just go out the first civ div and you just don't know what you're going to do. You have all these like emotions where you go, hey, I know I'm a badass, right? I know I can do all these things. I can do halos. I can do all these great things. But if you tell me the best job I can do is a $14 an hour job, I'd rather stay home. Or I know I can do this. I just need some technical skill sets and I don't have them. And it becomes so unsettling. Workshops for Warriors doesn't have that issue at all, ever. We literally, people come in kind of like shoulders hunched down, bent over. They're not sure what's going on. By the first week, you'll see like shoulders coming back. They know what they're doing. They come in saying, I'm a Navy veteran. I'm a Marine. I'm a scout sniper. I'm whatever it is. And then by the end, when they graduate, they'll say, I'm a machinist. Mm-hmm. I'm a welder. I'm a computer designer. And you can see that transformation in 4 months, this renewed sense of self. And it's a legitimate sense of self that's earned by the objective retention and application of knowledge, because they have these nationally recognized credentials that no one can take from you. It's like being a SEAL, but not having a PADI or NAWI dive card. You're like, bro.
Yeah, no, it's another qual. I'm like, what are you telling me? If you tell me you don't want to keep going, you don't want another qual, of course you do. What is it? Does it have a badge? Do I have a cool hat or something? What does it come with something?
Do you want to hear what Marcus's title is now? What we've named him? Groundskeeper. He loves to mow, and he's such a good mower.
I'm a stylist.
I'm a stylist. A yard stylist.
We have a really big yard. We live in the country, in the woods, and he mows every day. And we even got him a uniform, And
it's the same color as the Navy. I got a tan shirt and black pants.
He wears his uniform every day.
I never got out in my head. I never got separated. I'm just not on the combat line.
Yeah, like, so in his head, that's just his new title is groundskeeper.
Yeah.
And
I'm America's number one fan. Like, I literally have coined myself with that. I'm literally y'all's biggest fan for everything you've done. And I get to do that. I get to Forrest Gump it, bro. I mean, I'm on the mower all day, and then I go to the school to get my kids, and that's it.
Yeah, he drops off the kids at school.
Daddy daycare.
Thing.
What's up, man? I'm going to start my own carpool lane by a minivan, put bumpers front and back. Just wait.
You get to be super humble. We know your true title is like Master of the Lawn.
When I'm walking around, I say that. I was like, don't call me. Master. You know what I am. It's when you come into your new programs, you know how fired up you get. That sense of accomplishment really is, man. It truly is. The hard work, and then there is a reward. You can feel it. Like when someone acknowledges what you accomplished, and then that's what you when you become it.
I agree.
And I mean, that should never stop for us, because once it does, they kind of we're on a constant set of tracks. And
right.
If we're not feeding that thing, man, it can go bad, especially if what you're carrying.
Right.
Like if you're, what kind of train are you?
Right.
How have you been training? What kind of luggage are you carrying? If you get derailed, if you're some of us, man, you explode. And hurt a lot of people.
The biggest, we've had Medal of Honor recipients come in and speak at our school. We've had POWs, and they all tell us the same thing. You know, the guys that have the least amount of PTS are the ones that found a tribe that still stay in contact with their combat buddies. And the guys that come through workshops for us and the gals, they'll say, you know what? I felt lost. I was angry. I was, all the things that you feel when you come out. And they say, but I found this new tribe. And it's amazing because they feel this brotherhood. And we have a place here called the Galley, literally, where we all go eat. It's 120 of us every day that eat here. And it is so nice to see from instructors, staff, students, teaching assistants, all getting together, because our goal is to rebuild American manufacturing, right? And like you said earlier, you're undercover. Think about this. Now during COVID, it's highlighted the fact that we don't have masks. We can't get medications made. There's a chip shortage. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when America is going to go to war next. And if you think about it, we're both sailors. So what happens when shipping lanes get cut? How does America rebuild herself from within her shorelines? And that's where Workshops Warriors comes in. We're training veterans to be the vanguard of America's manufacturing force, using American equipment, American tooling, American supplies, American technologies. Because the most important thing that America is lacking right now, it's not people, it's not money. It's this staggering lack of vision that America can once again reclaim her title as world's manufacturing superpower, and do it in an environmentally responsible way, in an economically viable way, right? We can do this.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We don't have to go outside our borders.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't even have to leave.
Right.
One state's designed to feed the other one in some capacity.
Yes.
And, I mean, the dogs of war have been away too long. And every now and again, it's good to pull them back to the kennel and remind them of what they are and what they're fighting for.
Yes.
There's ways to do that. We can go down all day on that one, but you're talking about, like, you're absolutely right. And because we've been at war for 20 years, a lot of us.
Yes.
And because we got hit over here, anybody in uniform, especially right now, they're going through something that just makes us closer. If you pull camouflage apart, you have first responders, firefighters, you throw all the colors together, you get camouflage. That's us. And it's one team, one fight.
I agree completely. And that's the other thing we got to think about, right? We're all human. We all serve one capacity, the other one. And, we all got to regroup. We got to kind of become pilgrims again. We got to be what made America great. A bunch of people coming over here, overcoming adversity and saying, hey, together we can do this. Alone we can't. How do we rebuild our nation? How do we do this in a way that makes sense for everyone? But the core of it is work. Like,
yeah, work.
You got to do something.
You ain't got time to argue and do all this other stuff.
Right.
We're arguing over some silly stuff. Like, people are losing their lives over some silliness, truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
And if your ass was working, you wouldn't have time to do all that. A lot of times I see people out there protesting, man, you got a job or something? I mean, And there are a lot of people complaining, bitch, about people coming over here, making the trek to becoming Americans. Like, they're taking my jobs. Like, man, what do you do for a living? Or someone like that could take your damn job.
Right.
You
don't want that job, right?
Well, I mean, what is it? Exactly. It's like, man, what's what Americans do? We take each other's jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's by design. That's what competition state. Capitalism, you can call it that. I call it a competition state. It's like, man, if you get out there and you work hard, you can get anything you want here, and your people will reward you for it, especially if you show kindness. And if you sign up to protect them, that's another thing.
Right.
If this is one big house, and they always look to the older brothers and sisters who protect them, there's some people down here who can't fight. Mm-hmm. They freeze up. I mean, it's not their thing. They can't help it. That's why they got neighbors that can. That's why we all live together. Remember, we're the bastards of every other country that nobody wanted. We got thrown here. And here we are.
Or we didn't want to be there.
Whatever. That's our side of it.
You know, when you come back, I don't know if the same thing happened to you as well, but I remember coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and there were all these Vietnam vets that were a bunch of bikers. And I remember they accompanied us from the Dover Air Force Base all the way back to Norfolk. And the whole time after, like, who are these guys? What are they doing? And when we finally got to Norfolk, like, I got out and asked you, what are you guys doing? And they said, you know, when we came back from Vietnam, people were spitting at us and throwing at us and doing all these things. And we wanted to make sure that never happened to any other returning service.
You're talking about the guard riders?
The Patriot
Guard. Yeah, guard riders, yeah. Man. Awesome.
We love those.
That ought to be a job. Mm-hmm. There ought to be, right? You get a dollar taken out of your paycheck and it goes to the Vietnam vet, the guard riders, just mm-hmm. just for retirement. Because they when they show up,
mm-hmm.
you know it.
Yeah, we love the Patriot Guard riders. They have shown up on many, many occasions for
us. This surprised me a couple of times. Like, what are y'all doing here?
I had them show up for one of Marcus's birthdays.
Because usually they're hauling the buddies died. You know, yeah. Usually I only get to see them when they're taking me somewhere.
Yeah.
See a buddy that passed away. But they show up every now and again on.
Mm-hmm. We love Patriot Guard.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know what this group was called in Virginia, but I just remember being very grateful
Patriot
that people had taken that. And just, you know, it makes you realize that, oh, wow, I'm coming back. I've got this responsibility towards others as well, right?
Yeah. So they're in every state. It's like these little, they're in every city almost. I think they're in every city, every big city in every state. It's Patriot Guard riders. There's a huge, kind of like a VFW, how there's a VFW in every area. Well, they have Patriot Guard riders, and
it's the toughest, baddest ass motorcycle club there is. I guarantee that.
Yeah, they're
hands down
mostly Vietnam veterans. There's mm-hmm. some that aren't, that just are super patriotic, and they will show up when veterans come home and escort them places. They show up when veterans die and they escort them to the funeral home. I mean, to the burial place. They're an incredible organization, although I don't think they get paid. They just do it.
We've seen them roll thunder for over 2-3 miles, like where you can't even see the end of them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did it for Chris Kyle's funeral from...
I was from Austin, Dallas.
Yeah, we're from Dallas.
I've never
Austin.
Seen anything like that before.
They're a really good, awesome group of people. So they do have a name, and they're Patriot Guard riders, and they're literally in every state.
I will research that when we get off.
Yeah.
I wonder if they've probably already broken up into like certain frat houses. So if you get into one of them, you know how military do it. You know there's initiation in some of the houses. You're like, man, you got to be tough to be in that house, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they were doing a lot when, was it like 2006, 2007? There were a lot of protesters that were showing up at veteran funerals. And they started showing up to guard the burial from the protesters, so the families wouldn't have to see the protesters. And they basically just stood in a line shoulder to shoulder, and that's how they got really popular. And then they just started popping up in every city, basically. I mean, everywhere that we've been to a funeral, they've shown up. So anyway, we love them. They are great.
If you two are the draw. Like, what? Melanie and Marcus will be there?
Yeah. They're just an awesome group. But so what is your wife's role in this? Does she work with the workshop, or does she have a role?
Now she does. So my wife left me alone here for several years. She just come in, give me unsolicited advice that was always good. And
all right.
Yeah, because for the first 5 years, right, when I got out of the Navy, she was the sole breadwinner. And I told her, look, we're going to sell everything we have. We were two dinks, you know, dual income, no kids in Washington, D.C. And we sold everything, you know, all the cool toys, the Harleys, the BMWs, convertibles.
Wait a minute. Is that what that's called? Dinks?
Dinks, yeah.
What's a dink?
Dual income, no kids. I've never heard that.
Really?
I've never heard of that. Dink. All right. Yeah, I mean, I've heard that word, but I didn't know what that was. That's what that was.
Yeah. It's not before you had kids when you actually are well rested and you're not angry all the time over something that they did.
Right?
Right?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Before you were literally housing tiny little demon dinosaurs that were always looking and angling for a way to get at you. It's like living with the captors, right?
Watching, judging.
They're like little prisoners. Watching,
judging. Yeah. Who really runs that house, right?
Oh, yeah.
We talk about like, damn kids.
Right. But, you know, we did that. And I said, look, for 5 years, I need your help because I have to focus on that. And, you know, as you know, right, the less you do, the better you do it. And I was focusing on that. And after about 8 years, she kept telling me, hey, you should do this. Hey, you should do that. We actually have a sign at home that says, if at first you don't succeed, try doing it the way your wife told you.
Yeah.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hey, I get burned on that all the time.
Right.
Like first thing in the morning, I'm like, babe, what do you want me to do today? And she'll tell me. And that's the only thing I won't do.
Seriously.
It took me forever to figure that out. I was like, man, what is it? I could not put that together.
All right. He'll ask me for a honey-do list, and I'll write a list, and he'll do a ton of other things and nothing on the list. So I just go back and I underline and I exclamation mark and I circle.
I started coming up with this. I said honey-do list yesterday. You didn't have the time. It didn't have like 1500, you know, the time frame on there or anything like that. So, you know.
If you don't schedule it, it doesn't happen, Melanie.
Right?
Oh, tell me about it. I schedule everything for him.
I like walking around without form. You know, it's just kind of a void sticker on my forehead. Like, what can I do here? Like, oh, here it is right here. Boom.
You give a plan of the day.
That's the biggest thing when you get out. You don't have those. And there's nobody putting out the word. That you kinda, yeah,
we'd have guys that would show up here at workshops for years at 0600 and then be sleeping outside the door. And I'd come in the morning and go, hey, what are you doing? I say, hey, I just need a place to go. Can you just tell me what
to do? Something
to do.
Aww.
Right? And I was talking to a buddy and I started thinking, I was like, man, I have plenty to do. But I don't have any something to do. Like I don't have something to do. It's
mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? The way I'm trying to say, I was like, man, I knew I wanted to be a SEAL. I was like, that was what I was supposed to do. What I did, and everything else just kind of fell into place. And when we're in the military, nothing runs smoother than medical and dental. Your ass has to go, and then you're out of there so you can deploy. I don't know where the rub is when you get out.
Oh my gosh,
how that doesn't work, but. It happens so fast in there. The stuff that we worry about in the military or don't have to worry about is what you have to worry about on the outside.
Right.
I make dentist, doctor's appointments for him all the time, and he just mm-hmm. doesn't go. Hair appointments.
Because they won't let us play if we don't in the military.
Oh, my gosh.
Can't play. Here, I can still go do some stuff.
I try to like schedule it all out, make sure he goes. I make the appointments.
I'm a corpsman, man. I'm the worst patient.
And then he just.
I agree.
We're the worst patients.
I'll see him and I'm like, why aren't you at your appointment? He's like, oh, I really don't need to go today.
We'll reschedule it. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
I know how rescheduling works. Also, I could diagnose myself.
Which rescheduling means you reschedule and then you make me another appointment.
Yes, it does. Well, I love you. I've never said that I am in charge here. I'm merely for protection and maintenance.
Oh, man.
Well, Marcus, like you said, right, in the military, we all work for medical and dental. And the outside, they're like, well, they work for us. So you can kind of push them off for a little bit, right? You got stuff to do.
I learned more being a corpsman about how the military works. Everybody has to roll through that station. Think about that. Everyone has to go through that station. So you see it's something.
Oh my gosh.
But you're right. That's the big issue. And what I'll tell people when they show up is show up and I'll give you purpose. Like show up and I'll tell you how to help our nation. Show up and I'll tell you how to help rebuild our nation. And I tell every graduating class at Workshops Warriors, you know, now you're going to go off into the civilian world and do whatever you want. But when America goes to war again, I want you to report back to the closest DOD facility because we're going to need machinists, welders, fabricators to help get all those green things back in the ocean, to make sure that all those gray ships go out to sea, to make sure that all those aircraft fly. And that's where you guys need to help. Right? And they know this. So they're training for a civilian world where they know that they may be called back to active duty to help our nation. because we've lost this kind of corporate knowledge in the Department of Defense to fix our own equipment and to maintain our own equipment. We sent so much of that to be civilianized.
Yeah, well, that's another reason to keep them around, right? On the GS jobs, to GS them.
Right.
We started that in our community. A lot of the MASH chiefs and the guys, they would GS over, which is great because they spoke the language. They knew how to get stuff done.
It's harder when you deploy, though, right?
Yeah, of course.
Right. Y'all are both talking military language. So for the listeners out there that aren't veterans, that the GS means they're actually going to other government jobs, right? Like,
They're civilians.
Civilians. Right.
So they're government service employees, but they're not uniformed. They're not military personnel. They're civilians.
Right, like Border Patrol.
It's basically the most kick-ass job you can have in the military because you get to do the military stuff, get paid, but you don't have to do the military stuff.
But can they transfer over? Like, if you got out of the Marines, could you, and you moved back home to South Texas, say, could you go into the Border Patrol just by, like, switching over? How does that?
No, because each house has a, well, it depends. That's a deep question, actually.
The Border Patrol actually hires and recruits a lot from our students and from the Department of Defense, Border Patrol, the police department. Normally, their accession cycles or training programs are a little bit shorter than DOD's because DOD provides such a great training ground. Like Marcus said, about a percentage of Americans are actually able or eligible to serve in the U.S. Armed Forces because they might be overweight, they might have drug issues, they might have felony convictions, they might have tattoos. Who knows, right? They might not be medically suited for it. So of that 1% of Americans that are actually eligible to serve and complete at least one of 3 or 4 years duty,
that's a great point.
You're already looking at the cream of the crop. So when Border Patrol, police departments get them, there's not that much training that has to go into them. But there's no equivalency direct.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just because that's a great point. Doesn't mean you can't serve. There ought to be something you can, you know, like America. We have so many shifts and stuff. It's like when we show up for war and when we show up for humanitarian missions, we wear the same uniform and show up. I think there ought to be like cut some of that out, paint them a different color. And then our humanitarian services is just like a 2-year program you get out of high school. You have to go do it. You got to lead this country. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be the war fighter. I mean, we have those. That's our side, right? But then that's a good idea.
Like AmeriCorps.
Yeah. Check. Something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Or obligatory service. America used to have an obligatory draft, as do a lot of other nations. Like Israel has it, Argentina has it, where everyone has to serve 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, the way things are so good. If you're bitching about the good stuff that we have now, then you have to go serve, man. You just got to.
Agreed.
Even if it's in the Peace Corps.
I think everyone merits from that, and politicians are a lot less likely to put their own kids in harm's way. So it makes the nation as a whole kind of think about it before they start another war with no clear objective.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. 100%.
Right,
everyone's going in there. You're going to have you're going to understand why this place is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care where you come from.
Right.
I mean, the drafting into war is one thing, but this is just like another school. It's like there used to be ethics in school. Like that was a class. Right. Like how to treat people nice. I guess you know some people don't get raised that way. That's why you go to school to learn how to talk to everybody.
You're right. You know, when I went to school in France and in the U.S., and I also went to a school on Saturdays. Called Argentinian School, and we'd actually learn civics, morality, and ethics. You know, like what you're not just here, like waiting, like give me, give me, give me. You've got a responsibility to your community and to your society, and I think that's one of the things that are getting lost. Except if you serve, because then you realize, hey, we all have a part to do in this.
Sure.
And you understand like the duty, not just the duty, but like the watch of. Hey, it sucks, and I get it. And this year, tell you what, this year I'm going to stand watch on Christmas Eve. Next year, you'll do it. The following year, someone else will do it. But someone's got to do it.
Oh, those are the worst, man. That never goes away because somebody always outranks you. That's the beautiful part about being in the family. Like, you'll just be like, I don't have a watch. And then somebody will be like coming up and be like, well, dude, come on. I've been in the military longer than you've been on a toilet, son. You're gonna stand watch. And you learn to appreciate that because as you make rank, you understand why it works. And then there's guys below you and girls below you who want to make and do better. So they're pushing you. You don't have a choice. It's like the way it's designed is like a nuclear American society. Best way to say it.
But it's all centers on you got to work.
Yeah, you got to work service.
You have to work. Nothing's going to be given to you. And that's what we do here. Like our school is a filter. It's not a pump. Just like the military, right? It's a filter. It's not a pump. Not everyone can get in. And if you want to do well, you got to achieve. You got to put out. You got to have sustained superior effort and performance. And that's how you're measured.
Oh, I don't care if we started a snow cone stand with a bunch of team guys in there. It's going to be epic. All right. There's going to be a bunch of them. We were outwork literally everybody else. Like, how did you turn this around? Because we never shut down. Y'all might have been better and more whatever, but we just stayed, just we figured out a way.
Well, it's like Black Rifle. I mean, it's a bunch of veterans that got together and they're...
With Evan?
Evan and they're having a blast. They have a blast.
They have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And they're great guys.
Who'd think? Reinvent Coffee House. Who'd have thought that, right?
You know, when we started Workshop Warriors in 2008, at first, we were like, we're going to need more money. So we needed more money. Things always took longer than you thought it would. We kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We kept needing more money. And you know, some of the people that I served with said, hey, we're going to start a company. So we started a company called Vet Powered. He said, I want to start donating money. And Vet Powered was just named 2020 Veteran Owned Small Business of the Year for the United States of America by the Small Business Administration.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I love, man, when we do good. I feel that. I
what
feel
is
good when
Vet
we do
Powered?
Good.
Right?
What do they Say do? Again? What is Vet Powered?
They do advanced manufacturing, rapid prototyping, machine repair, and they make all sorts of cool stuff for big Fortune 100 companies and things that go into space.
Toys.
And a lot of things.
Toys. Military people get out of the head because we figured out the shortcuts how to do, because we have to use the stuff that they invent. And they send it to us. And then once we get it, and a lot of people don't realize this, we take the stuff that you don't need out of it and confine it all the way down to where you can put it into a cargo pocket and make it work.
Right. Some of the cool things, you know, that part makes.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I like it. Yeah.
That was one of the coolest things is what we
learned.
Pretty
cool things.
The toys.
Well, if you all come down here, we'll show you some pretty cool things.
We're definitely going. We'll figure out our schedule and we'll make sure we're there for an extra day so we can go tour your place. That is really cool.
Yeah, bro. Thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for sharing that.
Thanks for having me.
You're doing great things,
man.
We're gonna do what we can to make sure everyone on our end hears about it.
Yeah, we're proud of you. That's awesome.
You know, the number one thing that I would love is just getting people in, because once they come in, they go, oh my gosh, I should have come here earlier. You know, I get that from every 2, 3, and 4 star that comes by, and they go, oh my gosh, I should have listened to you, H, I should have come by earlier. I'm like, well, so what do we do next?
Yeah. Right?
How do we expand? I'm like, well,
how do we open one in Houston?
It's
we
like
have
this
so
is how
many
we
veterans.
Do it. It's a word of mouth thing. Because remember, when it starts with a couple of us, people will be like, that's just what they're doing. But as more vets, like it's word of mouth with us. You want something to spread like wildfire, let us get a hold of it and start spreading it. Because one guy will tell the next, and it'll go just like that. That's how you build it.
I would love that. And, you know, there was a guy from Qualcomm. In fact, he's in Texas right now. And he was the number 2 guy at Qualcomm. He's the guy that patented airplane mode.
Oh, wow.
And he said, on the 5th time he came here, he said, you know what? The first 4 times I thought that this was like a facade. I had no idea. I didn't think that you guys were really doing this, but I kept seeing graduates and students there in class every day and seeing new people and the transformation. And I realized, oh my gosh, you guys are serious. You really are doing this. And he joined our board of advisors and he's been a huge champion. It's a pity that sometimes you get burned so often that it's hard to believe things. But when people come here, they become believers.
That is so cool. Do you have social media for the school?
We do. It's wfw.org. Our social media account's very, very small because most of our full-time people are instructors and teaching assistants. But any help that you would like to give us would be gratefully appreciated.
Yeah, I'm going to look at it right now.
Yeah, we spend our money on training and on cool robots to train people so they get $60,000 a year jobs. Not so much on social media, but
we can figure that out on their own. That part's
Andrew's like, no.
It's pretty cool when you get some guy from Iowa comes up to you and it's 240-pound corn-fed guy.
Yeah, bear. Breathing hard.
And he says, you know what? I never thought I'd learn math. I never thought I'd learn geometry. And when, you know, first day of school, he said, nope, math, I'm out. That's why I joined the Marine Corps.
Yeah, right. And that's a thing.
Right? And then 2 days, then we like, slow down, killer. He goes, would you like to make a knife or a gun? I'm like, yes, I do. I'm like, all right, this is how geometry helps. And they've never had math applied before. Once you show them how math can be used to do the things that you want, they're like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. And now, this, you know, the same guy comes up to you a couple of months later and goes, hey, I'm a high-tech redneck now.
Yeah, right.
Because now
babe, you need to go through.
That's the thing is it's applied. Applied mathematics, like there's some people who can get in the book and they're just like, they can read it and they're fine. I got it.
Right.
And then some of it is, I read this thing a while back. It said, God made me bad at math because he knew I'd be too powerful. Now I love math. Like, I study it because I understand it. I mean, I can't stop it.
He loves math. I struggle with it.
Kind of coming up until people started showing me the tricks and the shortcuts.
Right.
The best example I use is the nines, like adding nines, like 9 and 7, 9 and 6. For a while, I'd be like, kind of figure out. But 9 plus 7 is whatever number's under 7 is 6. Put a 1 in front of it, 16. So 9 and 7, 16. Mm-hmm. 9 and 6, 15. I was like, wait, is that it? It's just 1 under it and put a 1 beside it? I was like, is there a trick for everything? And they're like, yes, there is.
There is.
I mean, if someone could teach it, and that's the beautiful thing, is imagine the person that can teach anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
That's truly a gift, because there's no such thing as someone can't learn. It's right. Just you can't teach it to them.
Someone. And they got to be motivated to try and learn it. And that's one of those things that you show the people things that they want to do, and then you show them easier ways to get it done. And they go, oh, this makes sense. That resonates with them. And then they do it and they go, oh, wow. So now I can do a bolt hole pattern. Why is that important? Well, I want to make a manifold for my Harley. Great. This is how you make it. Or I want to make pipes for my Jeep. Great. This is how you do it. And now they start realizing it. And one of the things that I love about Workshops for Warriors is you're creating this, you're like rekindling America's spirit of innovation.
Yeah.
Right?
Starting.
I love that.
Yeah, it's good. Did you do a forging shop? Like, where we make knives and the swords and all that?
We actually machine them.
But I'm sorry. Yes. That's what I'm talking about. On the lathe now?
So, computer-aided mills, computer-aided, computer numerically controlled lathes, mills, lasers, water jets.
I'm going to have way
robot.
Too much fun over there, bro. I'm like,
hey, he would love that.
I thought
Marcus
about going old school
always...
with hammers down here, but that on machines, that's something.
Oh, my gosh.
You can make suppressors in 8 minutes. I mean, there's some pretty
amazing
things.
Get me some Flex Seal and Dune Buggy.
We might have to get an Airbnb for 4 months and put you through. He would love to learn how to make
out there,
knives.
August at least.
Get your GI Bill.
Right?
That's awesome, man.
That would be so cool. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us about what you do. I had no idea. I did not know you existed. So very, very happy. And now we can spread the word.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to have me on your show. I really appreciate it. And Marcus, thanks for everything you do. I was at Qualcomm when they did one of the premieres of your movie at Qualcomm here in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And half of those proceeds went to support Workshops for Warriors. I really appreciated that as well. And you were pretty busy back then, so I didn't want to bug you.
No,
but
yeah.
Thanks for...
That was a wild time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was
thanks for everything. And Melanie, thanks for putting up with him. I know that vets can be tough, especially the first 5-10 years. But, you know, we're doing the best we can as we get out. So, God bless you and my wife for putting up with us.
Oh, well, it's paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless you, brother, man. Take care. We'll see you
soon.
Yeah, bro.
Thank you.
Aaron, thanks so much for being on, man. Hey, if you guys liked this episode, make sure to share it with a friend. The show is available anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, make sure you follow us on social media, teamneverquit.com/social. You can get all of our handles for Instagram, Facebook, all of that good stuff. We will see you guys next week.